Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Courage Conversation Show. I'm Ashley Easter. I'm your host, the founder and executive director of Courage 365, and we have a great show planned for you tonight. We have a guest named Andrew Pledger here, and he is a really amazing person. He's an advocate, a survivor of the IFB cult, the same church background that I came from. So it's going to be a really interesting interview tonight. And we're going to have him come on the show in just a second, but I'm going to go ahead and read his bio. I'll let him introduce himself as well, but I'm just going to go ahead and read the professional bio really quickly for you. So Andrew Pledger is a religious trauma survivor who escaped fundamentalist Christianity, i.e. the IFB cult. IFB stands for Independent Fundamentalist Baptist Church. He brings awareness to spiritual and religious abuse. His podcast, Speaking Up with Andrew Pledger, offers a platform for people to share their stories of suffering toxic religions and cults. Being part of the LGBTQ plus community and experiencing religious trauma has inspired him to pursue psychology to help survivors. So he's pursuing that right now. And in the meantime, he is a religious recovery coach, helping people grapple with life after religion. I'm actually, I had the honor of being on his podcast recently. I don't know exactly when that episode's going to be airing, but we'll make sure to share it because we had a fun conversation as well. Before I bring Andrew on the screen, though, let's take a quick break for these messages.
Talk about it. I was told not to talk about it. So I'm here to talk about it.
Because I can't stay quiet.
I was able to break my silence.
Because of those who refuse to stay quiet.
I am a businesswoman.
Activist.
Survivor.
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 Anxiousness can strike at any time, while driving a car, in the middle of the night, when giving a work presentation, or in a crowded place. Introducing CalmeGo, a smart calming device that learns your personal breathing patterns and adapts to you for immediate relief in just 3 minutes. It quiets your senses through breathing regulation, multi-sensory stimulation, and calming scents. Don't stress another moment. Click the Learn More button and start using CalmeGo today.
Hey, Andrew, thank you so much for coming on the Courage Conversation Show. How are you today?
I'm doing so good. Thank you so much for having me on. It is such an honor.
Oh, well, I'm really excited. And I know we got to chat a little bit in the past on your podcast. And so I'm really excited to be able to kind of do a reverse interview so I can hear more about you. I know our audience is really going to find a lot of value in what you have to say. So my first question is, can you kind of give us a nutshell version of your story? I realize that's a hard question to ask, but if you could just sort of give us an overview of your story, that would be really helpful.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I can totally break it down as little as I can. So like you heard Ashley said, I am a religious trauma survivor, and I grew up in the IFB cult. And growing up in that environment, I was exposed to a lot of toxic doctrines on human nature, sexuality, and just humanity in general. It was very, very demonizing of humanity, and really also on mental health too, which really affected me greatly. And, you know, I really bought into it. I was a hardcore fundamentalist Christian. You know, I was homeschooled my entire life for the purpose of indoctrination. And, you know, both of my parents, they graduated from Hiles Anderson College, which, for those listening, that is a fundamentalist Christian college, and it's a big part of the IFB movement. And they both graduated from there, and my dad was a pastor, and my mom was a Christian school teacher. And they did not like, shockingly, they did not like Christian schools. Obviously, they didn't like public schools, so they decided to homeschool me and my brothers our entire lives. And the control wasn't going to stop once we graduated high school. That was very clear because my parents told me and my brothers that they would only help us go pay for a Christian college. And that really limited the options of colleges to go to because a lot of Christian colleges are not accredited. And you can only get jobs within your religion or high system of control, which is a way they keep you in. So for me, trying to decide on a Christian college where I wouldn't be stuck in the system, because by the time I graduated high school, I knew I was ready to leave the IFB. I knew it was toxic. I had done research on fundamentalism in general and why it is a harmful approach to your brain psychologically and the way it develops and also how you view the world and treat other people. And it was a very, very divisive and a very us versus them mindset around it. And so, but I kept this to myself. Because I'm like, if I tell my parents that I'm leaving the IFB, they're going to be so upset. They're going to try to manipulate me into staying, or they're going to try to emotionally manipulate me in some way. So I had very few options to pick from. Most of them were Bible colleges. And of course, Hiles Anderson was on the list, which I was like, I knew I did not want to go there.
They still around? But, oh, gosh.
I know. But a college that was on the list, and it was actually accredited. So that means once I got a degree, I could get a job in any sector that I wanted to or would at least try to. And it was Bob Jones University. And this school was not something that I was super excited about, but college was something that I dreamed of, and I love learning so much. And, you know, by the time I entered college, I was aware of my sexuality, of being gay in this very conservative, fundamentalist Christian environment. And I struggled a lot with mental health issues. I had... I'm 22 now, but by the time I was 20, I had experienced 4 depressive episodes already. And there was so much shame around mental health, and I was always blamed. I was told that I wasn't spiritual enough, that I wasn't praying enough, that I wasn't reading the Bible enough. It was all my fault, and it was because I wasn't following the formula or the doctrine that they were presenting to me. So that really caused me to internalize a lot of things and really to shut down and kind of go into the freeze trauma response. And I definitely, disassociation was something that I lived in chronically, honestly. I always felt so detached emotionally and physically from my own body just to cope with the spiritually and psychologically abusive messages that I was subject to all the time at church and even at home. During homeschooling. So there wasn't really any break from it. So disassociation was basically, it's like when you can't physically get away from a traumatic situation, disassociation is like a mental flight. You're mentally checking out. And I didn't realize the damage of these doctrines and the IFB had on me until I came across the term religious trauma. And once I read about the term religious trauma, and for those who are not familiar with the term religious trauma, this is a definition I'm taking from Dr. Laura Anderson from the Religious Trauma Institute, but it is in religious situations where it overwhelms you so much on a psychological and emotional and physical level. It overwhelms you that you're not able to come back to a sense of safety in your body. So you are triggered in this traumatic state, and that's not able to be released. And that trauma is stuck in your mind and in your body until you get the professional tools to actually work through that. And a lot of symptoms of religious trauma are like struggle with decision making, anger, depression, grief, not feeling like you belong anywhere, feeling lonely, Not being able to really enjoy life, struggling to emotionally regulate, and even symptoms of like similar to complex PTSD of like I said, disassociation, nightmares, different triggers, just all these different things, different symptoms that come from as a result of religious trauma. And once I read this definition, I'm like, these are all the things I've been experiencing. And I was blamed and shamed so much for this, but they're the problem, not me. And to me, that was like a crazy solution or conclusion to come to, because I have been so indoctrinated. But once, I mean, it's insanity to be told to do the same thing over and over and nothing works. So you eventually have to learn to do something else. And really, like my struggle with my sexuality was the first thing that made me question the IFB, because my experiences didn't match the harmful messages that they talked about on sexuality. And so that's really what got me out of that indoctrination, that quest, going on a journey of questioning, really. And while at Bob Jones University, I was still subjected to a lot of spiritually and psychologically abusive messages. I was bullied and harassed a lot on campus by a lot of different guys on campus and in the dorms, because I lived on campus, because of my perceived sexuality, which I tried so hard to stay hidden and so no one would notice me. But it's very hard to stay when you're queer and you're going to a conservative Christian college. It's really hard to stay really low key, because sadly, you have to try so hard to hide who you are. You have to think about, how do I talk? How do I walk? What do I tell people that I'm interested in? What do I tell people that I like? Because those can be signs to kind of your own sexuality, even people have their own assumptions about things too, and which is, you know, stereotypes aren't always true, but there are some connections, I think, between that. And I noticed that in myself. And so I tried to basically put on a mask to conform. And that was really hard, because when you can't be authentic, you don't belong, you can't really find connection. And so while I was at Bob Jones, that was when I suffered 2 depressive episodes, and it brought me to the point of being suicidal, really. And a just trigger warning, I know, for a lot of people listening, but I just didn't know what to do. Like I said, I was struggling with all the symptoms of religious trauma. It was so overwhelming, and I had to learn in that moment to claim my autonomy. And you know, I am grateful that I'm still alive today, and I am able to share my story, because I had never been at such a low point. I literally was like, had a bottle of aspirin in my hand, and I was ready to end it all, because I didn't see any hope, and it was just too much, and I was just ready for the pain to end. But thankfully, I was able to find a community outside of Bob Jones, where I met a family who kind of took me into their home so I could get away from Bob Jones every once in a while. And while I was at Bob Jones, I was a photography major, and I used photography to explore and really dissect and process my religious trauma. And this was, flash forward, this was to my, I was doing this my senior year, which was the fall of 2021. And at that time, I had already, I'm leaving out a lot of details, but I had already done so much deconstruction and eventually deconverted. Mm-hmm. And really what helps me process and get to the point to make that series was that I have been writing a book since I was 19, just kind of, it was for my own personal use, just to express myself, because that was something that I wasn't able to do. I lived in a very emotionally dysfunctional household, and I was not able to express my emotions. And there was a lot of shame around that. So there were a lot of things I just needed to get out, and writing was the way, one of the ways that I decided to do that. And so through finishing the first draft of that book, I was like, okay, like, this is something I actually want to eventually publish, but I'm going to sit on this for a long time, because there's a lot to unpack and go through. But after the first draft, that's when I started working on the photo series of exploring what it felt like to experience religious trauma, and how that brought me to the point of leaving religion, really. And I decided to use that photo series to publicly tell my story of being queer and experiencing religious trauma and leaving religion to heal. And I released the series in January of 2022. So this year I released it. And I went on Joshua Harris's IG TV show, which for those who don't know who he is, he's an author who wrote I Kissed Dating Goodbye, which greatly influenced purity culture. But I knew he had publicly left Christianity and he was giving a space for people to share their stories of deconstruction and being an ex-evangelical. And so I reached out to him and he agreed to have me on the show. And I shared my photo series and I shared my story on his show. And that was the last semester of my senior year at Bob Jones. And I got actually expelled from Bob Jones University because of that interview, my very last semester. So since being expelled, that freed me to just keep on telling my story, bring awareness to religious trauma, and using social media to bring awareness and educate people on it, and also to become an activist, to bring awareness to religious trauma, and also to help religious abuse survivors find justice.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. I know that it's a lot of vulnerable pieces of your story, and it's an honor to be able to hear that. And I think there's so many so many pieces in your story that are truly tragic, and I'm glad that you're here today too.
Thank you.
I know what it's like to experience suicidal ideation, and it's a really scary place to be. And so I'm so glad that you're here. I'm so glad that you're finding healing that you are using your story as a way to empower yourself and then to empower other people. That's really what we're about here at Courage 365. And I think you're just such a beautiful example of that. And so there's so many questions that I have, but when we talk about religious trauma, you kind of brought up a definition, which was really helpful. And I think that that's maybe a newer definition, because when I kind of got into the advocacy space several years ago, people were only just beginning to talk about religious trauma and spiritual abuse. And I'm so glad that it's kind of become something that's more on the forefront, and we have definitions for and we have a mixed variety of people who tune into our show. People who used to be in toxic forms of religion and have left. We have people who are in different religions that are not Christian. We have people who are atheist or agnostic. And so a question I have is, why do you think it's so important for us to be able to have definitions and have descriptions of religious trauma or spiritual abuse? Because I feel like it's one of those things that's taken a while to evolve into something that people really talk about. And so I think a lot of times when somebody's in a therapy session or when they're in a conversation about abuse, we talk about the main types of abuse that people think about, it, the emotional, the physical, the sexual, you know, those types of abuse. Why is it so important to have definitions of religious trauma?
Yes, most definitely. And the thing is, religious trauma is comparable to complex PTSD. So people could say, oh, I have complex PTSD from religion. But I don't think that's very, I mean, it's comparable, but it's not accurate. But I think the thing that makes religious trauma stand out from the other types of trauma, because religious trauma is a bit more specific than just general trauma. And I think the reason is it really destroys your ability to be in touch with yourself and a higher power. It really distorts, because I think a lot of us who experience religious trauma, we at one time had this connection to religion and we got something from it. And at one time, I feel like there was a period in my life where I believed that there was a God and that he loved me and that he cared about me. But that religious trauma caused me to believe that God really hated me and wanted to destroy me. So because of all the toxic messages, to have this emotional or psychological dependence on a higher power and to have that taken away. And I think that's something people don't talk about a lot, is the connection to that feeling or experience of a higher power or a higher connection to something outside of ourselves or something greater than ourselves. And to have that just cut off. And there are many other aspects of religious trauma, but I think that's something that people don't talk about. And I think there are people, you know, I am a religion recovery coach, and I understand there are different paths that people want to take, and I try to help people find the path that works for them. Some people want to deconstruct. Some people want to deconstruct, then reconstruct, or deconvert, or reconvert, all these different things. And I respect that, and I try to help people find what they need. Yeah. But I think for people who experience religious trauma and they want to leave their religion and they want to find a healthier denomination or a healthier spirituality, that religious trauma can distort and destroy your connection with all spirituality, period. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so devastating about it. And adding on to all the different kinds of traumas on top of that, of the complex PTSD and all the mental health systems and all the somatic symptoms in your body, it's just so much on top of another. And like, that's why it's compared to complex PTSD, because it's so many traumatic incidents that's piled up one on top of the other. It's not just one instance, it's so many things all together. And I think it's important for us to bring awareness to it and to define it. Number one, so the psychology community can actually start taking it seriously and try to actually be informed and respect people from religious backgrounds. Because when I've talked with people who've experienced religious trauma and they still want to be religious or spiritual, they're very scared to go to a therapist or a psychologist, because I'm like, oh, like, there's so many people who are atheists, and what if they make fun of me or they judge me for being religious or spiritual? And I think they're afraid of that judgment that they're going to get. And I think, sadly, religion has tainted the view of psychological health and mental health, sadly. So I think that makes it harder, too, for us to seek that. So I think, yeah, defining it so professionals can actually know about it. And like, there needs to be so much more research on religious trauma, which is something I want to do and what I'm working on, finishing my bachelor's degree. I want to get a master's and eventually a doctorate, which that'll be a long time from now, but eventually I will get there. And I want to really help create a modality and an approach to help psychologists treat religious trauma, because it is such a common thing. And I remember a Psychology Today article, it's called The Invisible Demographic, and it was talking about religious trauma survivors, because we are an invisible demographic, and thankfully we're starting to go on the internet and begin to speak up about our experiences, but we need the psychology community to really know how to deal with spirituality and people who need that for healing, and also to research more into developing therapeutic techniques to help people heal. And it's interesting, as even in my undergrad, as I've been thinking about ways to heal religious trauma, and the thing that is so fascinating to me, which I think will be the future of mental health medicine, but also a big part to help religious trauma, is using psychedelics, honestly, because of it's just unlike anything, any kind of thing we've had discovered, I think, because psychedelics cause you to restore that spiritual connection. And it is just crazy to me and incredible how a plant can just take it and it can help you feel that connection to something greater outside of yourself, and really help you to process trauma.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. And I think you're 100% right that the definitions, that the understanding of what fits into religious trauma is so important. I think it's first of all important for people to have words to describe their experiences.
Yes.
And then after that, for professionals to be able to have a body of research to be able to help people, because most of our society is religious or was religious at some point.
Yes.
And I think those numbers might be changing a little bit of who identifies as religious, but most people had a religious background.
Yeah.
And the amount of trauma that can be experienced within religion, like you said, the invisible people, this invisible group. So it's super important for that. I really appreciate that perspective there. And then what you're saying about psychedelics, it is so interesting. I've been doing some research on that as well. And I think I'm forgetting what the acronym stands for, but I think it's the MAP group, M-A-P. And they do a lot of research on how it can help your brain and kind of rewire things in a more healthy way, and that there's a lot of research about how psychedelics used properly often in with a therapist can help with anxiety and depression and things like that. And so it is a really interesting field that I think has been there's just been a lot of negative talk about plant medicine in the past, I guess, because of the war on drugs. And so now that it's coming back to the forefront and people are doing research on how we can use these things in a way that helps, that's really great. So you talked about being gay. And we at Courage 365, we are supportive of people no matter what their gender identity is, including every gender identity. We love people across the board. And so I'm super excited that you are out and proud now, but I also realize that that was a really difficult thing. And if you feel comfortable, I was wondering if you could share, it doesn't have to be personal, it could just be general, but like, what are some of the specific traumas LGBTQ individuals may experience within the realm of religious trauma? What are some things that you would want our community to be aware of? Because religious trauma as a whole, it can affect anybody. But then when you layer it with having an LGBTQ plus identity, that's even more trauma. And so if you feel comfortable speaking to that, educating our community a little bit on what that looks like.
Yes, most definitely. Like, religious trauma can definitely, it can affect anyone, most definitely. But when I got online and I saw people who talked about religious trauma, I noticed that a lot of them identified as a part of the LGBTQ plus community. And so I started to see that correlation. And, you know, of course, there are people outside of the LGBTQ community who have also experienced religious trauma. What I noticed, too, is that I noticed Christians online bragging about how religion contributed to a better mental health. And I was like, whoa, like, hold up. Like, do you know that it has the opposite effect with the LGBTQ plus community? It like worsens our mental health a lot. And I think also, too, that they don't consider really minority groups at all, how it affects them, or in which, to me, which annoys me the most is that I see this trend of people like, oh, well, it benefits the majority of people, so that's great. So then I'm like, okay, what about the minority of people? Okay, maybe there's like millions of people it helps. So let's say there's 100,000 religious trauma survivors in the US. I'm sure there's so much more than that. This is just hypothetical. But what about those 100,000 people? Like, what about them? And so, okay, well, it's the majority, so we won't care about those people. It just kind of reminds me of the reaction to the COVID-19 pandemic. It was just, which I'm not going to get into that. But it's like, We need to learn to value every social group and every person. And so with religious trauma and how it affects LGBTQ plus people specifically, I think what happens when we grow up in these very isolated and controlled in environments, I think we are indoctrinated to really have a homophobic view of LGBTQ plus people. That's what I experienced. So your first experience in this environment of LGBTQ plus people is that, number one, these people don't even use LGBTQ plus. They just say like sodomites or homosexuals.
Yeah.
And that's basically what they use. So they use a lot of hateful terms. And your whole life, you just hear these constant negative messages about how God wants to destroy these people. He wants to, he burned down and destroyed this city because he hated them so much and blah, 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 and all these different things. And basically, you're given the impression that if you, if you're outside the heteronormative standard, then God's angry with you and he won't love you until you actually change. Mm-hmm. And to me, like, something didn't match, because I was like, okay, so like all these people, they're claiming that they're conformed to their religion and they're getting saved, but yet they're still imperfect, but God forgives them. But God can't overlook this or not care. So it's just, it seemed like double standards. Like, it was okay for them to break certain rules that they were required to follow, but other things, no, like, that's not, like, you have to like be perfect actually. So it's like, oh my. And just so people know, like, I'm talking in language that these people talk like. I don't believe these things at all anymore. But I think the negative messaging that you hear over and over, it eventually, once you become aware of your sexuality, all that hatefulness and negativity that you have that you thought was outside of you, it then goes inward and it becomes internalized homophobia. And for me, the symptoms that happened because of that, like, it was such a strong feeling of self-hatred that I really fell into a deep depression. Because, the religious trauma of, oh, one moment I thought God loved me, but now since I have a different sexuality than what the Bible supposedly teaches, then I'm unacceptable. God's angry with me if I don't change. So it's just this level of fear, and also like disgust and just self-hatred for yourself or for myself that I felt. And I fell into a deep depression, and it was really terrible. It got to the point where I just didn't have an appetite anymore. And I stopped eating, and I really couldn't eat anymore. And if I did try to eat, I would usually throw it up, because I was just, my body was just experiencing so many symptoms of with that internalized homophobia and that religious trauma. And the way my mind's way of getting through that was developing another identity or a personality, which I've talked to my therapist about. I was like, this is really crazy. I didn't know this could really happen. And really, when I talked about it with my therapist, he was like, Andrew, he's like, you couldn't stand the thought of being you. So in order to live, you had to be somebody else. And that was your mind's way of getting through that depression and coping with that trauma. And I was like, okay, I'm like, that does make sense. Thankfully, I was able to finally get out of it and cope. But it took a couple of years to really be aware of myself and who I am and my identity. It took me years to build healthy self-esteem. So I think, yes, the negative messages, the internalized homophobia, and even as developing children, and I think it happens in kind of usually around like 11 to like 15-ish is usually, I feel like, when people become aware of their sexuality. They don't necessarily have the language for it. Mm-hmm. They just know that they're different than what their social group is telling them. And so for me, it was really confusing, because my experiences didn't match what they were telling me. And when you live in a family and they say terrible, awful things about a certain group of people, and then you're like, oh, well, I fit into that group of people, I think that does cause a lot of harm psychologically, because what that parent is communicating unknowingly is that if the child becomes honest about who they are, then that parent won't love them anymore, or they'll judge them, or they'll think they're disgusting or whatever. And so I think for me, that really caused me to have an insecure attachment to my parents, because I heard them say terrible things about gay people. And I think in order to protect myself, I just started to emotionally detach and have that insecure attachment. And to grow healthily in an environment, you need to be able to belong. And growing up, I never really belonged. And a lot of queer people never really belong. We just have to fit in to survive. And, you know, fitting in is when you have to put on a mask and pretend to be somebody else, really. And you have to deny your needs and your expression of yourself. But to belong means that you can be authentic. You are seen, you are heard, you are understood, and you can be yourself without being judged. And you're free to be. But a lot of people really take that for granted. And a lot of queer people, we don't get, we really have to micromanage every part of our lives to try to survive, really. And we don't get that connection that we really need in these environments. And that, and not getting that true human connection, that's traumatic in and of itself, of needs that aren't being met. That will cause a lot of psychological and mental issues from not socializing, because we really need that as human beings. Because, you know, when I talked to my therapist, I was like, I was around a lot of people and I talked to them. And he's like, yes. He's like, but were you able to be authentic? Were you actually able to connect and be honest? And I was like, no, it was just, I had to be fake. I had to put on a mask. And so there was just this wall that was put up between me and everyone else, really, because of that. So that lack of connection is a big part of the trauma. And just the hateful rhetoric that you hear from your family and your community, and just the fear for your life. You know, as human beings, we need to be able to return to a sense of safety in an environment. And when you're queer and in these kinds of environments, there's really no place to return to a sense of safety and to calm down, or there's no one to go to, or we can talk about the struggles that we're having and the traumas and issues that we're having. And so many things are just locked up inside that build and build and build, and really just result in expressing itself in mental health issues, or expressing it somatically in your body through like headaches or different pains or just feeling fatigue. And I think it's really sad of how people are really taught to hate themselves, yeah, and are just hear this awful rhetoric all the time. And, you know, it's like you get in every social setting. Like I said, there's no place to have a sense of safety. And to have everyone in your social group reject you really without knowing it, it is traumatic in and of itself. And sadly, in some situations, or in a lot, sadly, there's conversion therapy in these churches, that once a teen or someone is found out that they don't conform to the heteronormative standard, you know, they're subjected to psychological, spiritual, and emotional abuse, and sometimes physical abuse, to conform, or at least pretend to conform to this specific box that they're supposed to fit in. And thankfully, I was not subjected to conversion therapy until I was in college. Thankfully, that didn't happen in my youth. But conversion therapy was something that I kind of chose in college, just out of curiosity. And I felt like emotionally manipulated and deceived into thinking that it was possible to change. But once I started getting into that and understanding what was really happening internally, I could feel so many religious trauma triggers going off in my mind and my body. And like, I don't remember my first conversion therapy session, because like I completely disassociate. I can't tell anyone anything that happened, because I don't know. I wasn't mentally there.
And was that through the college, or?
That was through the college, yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I think this really brings into perspective for people who maybe haven't experienced this form of religious trauma. And I also know that in our community, we have a lot of LGBTQ plus individuals. And I'm sure that as they're listening to this, there are parts of your story that they're like, wow, yeah, me too. And I don't think we've had quite this sort of a raw conversation around religious trauma and the LGBTQ plus community before. And so I thank you for going there with us, kind of giving us an overview and a personal perspective on your experience. And you're right, the lack of community is a huge thing. That if a baby is not given attention and warmth and love as a child, like, that emotionally stunts them for potentially their entire lives. We as humans are creatures who are meant to have connection. And so even if it happens where there's that lack of connection later in life, there are ripple effects. There are effects that is a trauma created. And I think it's so interesting how you talked about some of the people saying these hateful things. They didn't know that they were talking about you in that moment. And yet, even if their intention wasn't to talk about you, they were talking about you. And that impact was still there. And what I take from that, and what I hope our community takes from that, is you don't always know what's going on in other people's lives. And when you think you're just putting out an opinion on your social media, or in your friend group about a group of people, you may not know who you're really impacting. I remember as I was deconstructing and changing my mind to support, you know, the LGBTQ plus community, I did a lot of research and those types of things. But one of the things that really stood out to me is I started having friends come out to me. And for some of them, I was one of the first people that they had come out to. And these were friends I had no idea were on the LGBTQ plus community. And when I heard that they were gay or lesbian or however they identified, it caught me off guard for two reasons. One, there was this idea that the church had created that LGBTQ plus community is like these evil beings and that they're so scary. And in fact, these are my friends. They were some of the nicest, sweetest, most compassionate, most loving people I'd ever known. And then the other thing that surprised me about it was just how good some people are at hiding their identity because they're forced to hide their true identity because of these traumatic environments. So thank you for sharing that. Thank you for going there with us. And I kind of want to leave it on sort of a high note. I know you're a religious trauma recovery coach, and I'm wondering if you could give maybe three tips to our community, two or three tips about how to heal from religious trauma. Maybe they are in the LGBTQ plus community, maybe they're not, but just some tips that you maybe give your clients, that you teach people to kind of give them some hope.
Yeah, most definitely. And like, you know, I'm just want to make it clear, like, I'm not a therapist. It's something that I want to eventually become, but I have done a lot of research and a lot of like personal work on myself. So this is from my own personal experience. But for me, what started my path to healing was, number one, finding a real community. And the situation that I was in, I was really not allowed to find a community, really, for me, because of the school that I went to. I was very strict about places I could go, so I had to get around the rules and break rules, because I had to meet my own needs. I had to take care of myself, and I know there are some people in that situation, but know that your needs are valid and they do need to be met. And so for me, finding community in an affirming church was great for me. And for people who don't want to go to church, though, just go on to Facebook and you will find a lot of like groups locally in your town. If you can't, you can find groups online. There's people that you can talk to and just be honest and authentic with. And even just having that online friend to express that to and to relate to. And to have that online connection can even make such a difference. So finding that real community where you'll be loved and accepted. And number two, I'm trying to remember when I dug into religious trauma, because it can be scary and really overwhelming. But I highly suggest, if you can, go to a therapist and talk about your background, and they will help you work through it. And like, I know mental health care is something that can be hard for some people. Not everyone has insurance. But on my website, I have a wonderful resource page for religious trauma and mental health, where you can get the resources and more affordable psychological help that you need. So please check that out. And also, I guess I would say is learning to know yourself and connect to yourself. And that is just so important, because those of us who grew up in these toxic religions, we were disconnected from our thoughts, our emotions, and our bodies completely because of these toxic things that we were taught. Mm-hmm. And so when you're disconnected with yourself, you can't know yourself. And if you can't know yourself, you don't know what's going on with your emotions. You can't emotionally regulate. You don't know what your needs are, let alone how to meet them. So it really starts with just getting in touch with yourself. And when I started doing that in therapy, at first I was like, what is this? This is kind of dumb, but it makes so much sense and just so helpful. But one of the things that kind of like surprised me was they're called grounding techniques. And my therapist taught me a technique called drop the anchor. And he taught me this because I struggle so much with disassociation. And he noticed this even in his sessions, that I would just mentally go, and he would try to help bring me back into the present moment. And dropping the anchor, just at the core, it means you're getting in touch with every one of your senses and you're focusing on it. And what my therapist told me, like, it totally makes sense and it blew my mind. And it seemed obvious. I was like, oh, I should have thought of that. But when you are in touch with your senses, you can only be present, because our mind can go to the past and it can go to the future, but our senses can only be in the here and now. So if you're in touch with your senses, you are being present. So if you're focusing on something you're touching or something you're tasting or you're breathing, you can only be present in your body. And that was something that was so powerful for me, that helped me to learn to really notice the chatter going on in my brain, noticing my body, and really knowing what I needed to do to meet my needs.
That's amazing. I think that's going to be super helpful. So just as a recap, the three tips are: find a supportive community, get yourself in with a therapist if at all possible. And then number three is ground yourself, get in touch with your body.
Yeah.
So important. Hey, Andrew, thank you so much for being on the show. The last question I want to ask you is something that we ask all of our guests, and that is, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Oof. The best piece of advice I have ever received. Wow, this is hard, because I've been given a lot of terrible advice growing up. So it's like, oh my gosh. So I guess the best advice that I've been given most recently is really, and it's something that I'm still working on, is that it is okay to rest, and you do need to rest. Because I noticed once I left religion, I still was like trying to find all these different things to do, to constantly be busy, to avoid myself, and that I felt shame about resting and just taking time for myself. So I think the best advice that someone has ever given me is that it is okay to rest, and your worth doesn't come from what you do. You have inherent worth as a person.
Wow. Thank you for that. That's so good. That's so good. And I know after this, people are going to want to find you. Tell us where we can find you, social media, your website, all the things.
Yeah, so I'm very active on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and Facebook. And I'll send you my Linktree. My Linktree has all of the things that I have. I'm very obsessive about my Linktree. I change it all the time. It's really funny because I'm like, no, I want to change this. But my Linktree, it will walk you through all the things where my social media is and really through my story. And my art photo series is my Linktree also.
People are going to want to see that. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So all the things that you need to know are right in there.
Okay. Excellent. Well, Andrew, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you. And thank you. This has been really enlightening and empowering for our community.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much for having me on. I've really enjoyed this.
Absolutely. Hey, and everybody, make sure you're also following us on our social media platforms. So we have Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram. You can follow us there. And we've recently started a TikTok. So stay tuned. We're going to have more videos coming out. And we also have some resources for you on our website. One of the free resources there just for visiting our website is the 5 Keys to Living a Life of Courage ebook. You can find this when you go to our homepage. You just scroll down to the bottom and it's right there. It's totally free and it helps you take your next most courageous steps on your healing journey. You can find that at courage365.org. In addition to that, we also have our need help list with a bunch of different resources available to you. You can find our courage cards there. Very soon, we are going to be having our 30 Days of Courage event coming up October 1st through the 30th. So stay tuned to hear more about that. We have some great guests coming up. And then last but not least, one of my favorite things to tell you about is our text message list. So this is a free text message list where we send you encouraging, empowering text messages every morning, Monday through Friday. And all you have to do to join is open up your phone, pull it out with me, open it to a clean text message, and then where you're going to type the number, I want you to type this number. So do you have your phones out? Clean text message, ready? Okay, here's the number that I want you to type in. It is 917-809-7311. That's 917-809-7311. And then in the message section, you're just going to type the word courage. Just courage and hit submit. And when you do, you will get empowering text messages written by survivors for survivors for our community. You won't be spammed. You're not going to get messages from other survivors. It's simply from our team. When I say not from other survivors, I mean not from other survivors on our text message list. You'll get them from the creators of the messages. It's a really great way to connect. It's a kind of that shot in the arm of courage in the morning that you need to kind of get through your day. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Please be sure to share this on your social media. And as always, live with courage.